M28, number 4A.
Now, I would just like to impress the thought, you see, that this word order, in its irreversible order, is really an order that is immanent in being. It hasn't anything to do with people or with races or with religions or anything like that. It's an order that is immanent in the divine principle of being, and that is the reason why everything that has a creative movement in itself follows that order. So I just want to take one or two other examples to show that this order is by itself a divine idea. It is a divine idea because we can see when we look over the whole development of biblical history that the evolution of idea went along that word order. You know how Peter said that one day with the Lord is as a thousand year, meaning really that one day of creation, that one stage of a synonymous term has been represented in biblical history through a thousand year period. And so when one looks back over the history of the Bible, starting with 4000 BC and up to 2000 AD, covering really 6000 year periods, 6000 year periods, you see, and that we are just entering the seventh period of a thousand year millennium, we can so easily detect in the spiritual development of the Bible and since the Bible history, that development. Let's take the first thousand-year period and just pinpoint it because there is a huge literature on this subject already existing among the students of Mr. Dawley and he himself, so that I don't have to repeat myself too much, just to pinpoint and impress the idea that the first thousand-year period lasting from 4000 to 3000 B.C., really is that period in the Bible that starts with the first record of creation, just giving the tone of the seven, and then the second record of creation, 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 and you hear the tone of mind. And all that is shown there are the genealogies of Adam, and just going right from verse to verse, and he begat, 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 just to impress that idea that mind is the creator, that mind is the producer, that mind is the parent mind bringing forth the whole line of life. Then the second period of spirit, covering the period of 3000 BC to 2000 BC, is that period of Noah and his ark and the Tower of Babel. Now, if you look up in the glossary those three terms, Noah, ark, and Babel, you see that it all turns around the tone of spirit. Noah is defined as knowledge of the nothingness of material things and of the immortality of all that is spiritual. Can you see? It has to do all with being able to distinguish between the material and the spiritual, and to know the nothingness of the material and the somethingness, the substantiality of the spiritual. Ark is defined as the understanding of spirit. Can you see how clear that is? Destroying belief in matter. Again, that question of spirit and matter. Babel, naturally, is defined as the mingling of matter and spirit. So you have a whole period that was only focusing on that big issue of spirit. Is spirit the only substance, or is matter also substance? Does matter and spirit cooperate or not? And therefore the insight of Noah building his ark, that one should separate the material beliefs from the understanding of spirit. Once that has been established, then the third period of a thousand year breaks in, that goes from 2000 BC to 1000 BC, and that is the period which is characterized by soul, namely by the passage from sense to soul. You can see again the logic in the development of the idea that is presented. First, the period of mind that says, here is mind creating its own idea, here is mind bringing the light on the line of light. Then spirit period coming in and says, yes, but be careful, distinguish between what is the line of light, what is spiritual, and between that which is material, and don't mix it up like in Babel, or that will lead nowhere. But if you separate like Noah did, and with his ark, and pitch your ark so that nothing foreign can enter your spiritual consciousness, then you will be safe. Then you will land on Mount Ararat, and you will find real firm foundation. And at that moment comes in the third period, which says, all right, then make that passage from the material to the spiritual. Make that passage from sense to soul. Then make that passage of disidentifying you with the material concept and identify yourself with the spiritual concept. Soul identifies, soul names. And therefore that whole period is characterized by the passage. It's the wandering in the wilderness. Again, you have the wilderness experience like Matthew in the third stage. It's the wandering from sense to soul. All those patriarchs were wandering around, constantly being on that passage. Wandering, wandering, wandering. Getting out of Ur in Chaldee and then getting into Canaan and wandering down to Egypt, coming back from Egypt. You see, wandering from coming back from Egypt and going through the wilderness again and coming to Jordan and passing over the Jordan and taking possession of the land, the promised land. And that brings us to the end of the third period, 3,000-year period. And you see in that passage from sense to soul, but you also see in it the true identification, the true naming. In that period, everyone was named anew, given a new identity, a new name, a spiritual meaning, instead of having a material meaning. You have there Abram being renamed to Abraham. You have Sarai being renamed to Sarah. You have Jacob being renamed to Israel. You have Benoni being renamed to Benjamin, and so on, and so on, and so on. You just can go and read through that part of the Bible, and everybody is being renamed, re-identified, just as we re-identify ourselves rightly and no more name ourselves wrongly. Until finally, even they would rename God and say he is no more really the God of Abraham and the God of Jacob and the God of Isaac. He is the I am that I am. He got a new name, the true ego, the ego of soul, the I am that I am. And you know that in that period, it's that period where they really began to handle the counterfeit of soul, namely sin, namely witchcraft, magnetism, animal magnetism, malicious animal magnetism down in Egypt, where they had, through those seven plagues, could handle all the claims of animagnetism. Is it clear? It just sticks out, those periods. Then the moment they entered the promised land and took possession of Canaan, took possession of the promised land, that was round about the year 1000 BC. And the fourth period running from that point to the birth of Jesus is that 4000 period, which is characterized by principle, and we have that principle brought out in various ways. First, it is brought out by the demand of the Israelites, give us a king, the demand of government. They ask for a wrong sense of government. Really, Samuel wanted to give them a theocratic government, but somehow they couldn't make it that way. They were not yet able to demonstrate theocratic government, and so they asked for a counterfeit sense of principle, give us a king. And so Samuel said, all right, if you want to go through that trouble, you can have it. And so I give you a king, and you make your own experience, and you will see that it doesn't lead anywhere. So he made Saul king, and it really didn't work. And then David took over, and he made quite a good job out of it, because he individually had a theocratic sense of government, because he was not made king by somebody else, like Saul was made king. He made himself the king. He was the one who said, I'm persecuted, but I know that within me is the king. And he said, I'm going to be king, and I'm not going to be subject to the priesthood. He ate the showbread, which he wasn't allowed to eat, and he said, I know that I have the right to my unity with principle and build up the principalship, the kingship within me. But his successors didn't make it anymore. They hadn't that theocratic idea of principle, and so his whole reign fell to pieces. It was split up in Judah and Israel, and afterwards one after the other went into captivity, and so they lost the rulership on themselves. Until then the prophets came along and were teaching then Israel and say, you know, because you don't turn to the Lord, because you don't accept principle as your governor, you are brought into captivity, but the moment you return to the Lord, you will be freed again out of captivity. And so they were brought back by the prophets, by the by that insight into the signs of being, back into the Holy Land, and let God govern the land. Then you come to the fifth period. You see, did I put that right about the fourth period? It's right and wrong government. Huh? Theocratic government, like the prophets, like Samuel, right from the beginning wanted to see the country be ruled by a theocratic government. Then came first the counterfeit of it, government through people, through kings and rulers. Then that broke down completely, brought into captivity. In captivity, they began to study the Bible. They began to reassess, really, their true principle that they have been taught, and therefore, in captivity, they began to see the government of principle. And that government of principle brought them back into the Holy Land again. Then breaks in the completely new period, the fifth period, running from Jesus' birth through the first 1,000 year of our calendar. That 5,000 year period is really characterized by Jesus coming and saying, why do I come? I have come that ye have life and that ye have it more abundantly. And so his main concern was to demonstrate eternal life. To demonstrate that if we accept the prophetic principle, the theocratic principle, that principle would always demonstrate life, abundance of life, immortal life. And so he could prove it through resurrection and ascension. Then the Bible stops at that point, though Jesus himself naturally proved life and truth and love. But in a universal way, we still had to go through the development of the centuries, and we can see that with the breaking in of the 6,000 year period, in that 1,000 year period which now comes to the end between 1000 and 2000 AD, that is the period of truth where mankind in general freed himself from being ignorant. It is freeing themselves from the doctrines of the church, having free access to knowledge through universities, building up universities, the Magna Carta for the first time writing down that man is free and that he has right to self-government, that Christian Science comes and says man is free, born free from sin, sickness and death. And so brings in the age of science, the Renaissance, the rebirth of science taking over, science becoming the master, Let us have dominion, signs giving men dominion in the right and in the wrong way. We always have in these periods the right and the wrong way, because the right idea always brings to the surface the wrong concept too. And so finally we have here the end of the 6,000-year period as the birth of the science of Christian Science, truth in its fullest structure and superstructure. And now we are approaching the 7,000-year period, and one can see the signs of it coming all over the place, the 7,000-year period. It is the 1,000-year period of the woman, of the mother, where woman claims her proper rights. It's the 1,000-year period of metaphysics, where physics comes to the borderline of metaphysics, and where the world will just step over that borderline. We can see it already happening, that people begin to investigate the metaphysical field much more. Even the parapsychological field, the field that was considered to be mystic and occult, is suddenly taken serious, that there is a science of mentality, that the mental realm has a science, that there are mental forces at work, that one could scientifically investigate those mental forces, parapsychology, telekinesis, telegenesis, all those phenomena are now taken serious, not only in this country, but also in Russia, or even more so in Russia, where there is a great interest in the universities for these ideas. It is a period of motherhood, of oneness, of integration, where one feels that the world is one world and that everything belongs together. Thank you. So that we come to the one world, to the one God, to the one science, where all that disintegration into specified sciences and specialization will be overcome by unification of science, where the world becomes one world, and all these signs we can read already today all over the place. So that we come to a kind of fulfillment of the 7,000-year period. Now, you can see nobody has figured that out, because nobody was at the point of figuring out, thank you, what is the next step? What should be the next step in the spiritual development of the idea? The idea precipitated itself on consciousness. It's the idea that thinks the thinker, and not the thinker thinks the idea, because the idea has order. And so the idea is working and working and just finds those transparent spots and points where it can shine through. And from those little spots where it shines through, it rips open or tears open and explodes all the limits, you see, so that it can flow through in its fullness. And this is what we somehow have to see, you see, that we get away from that ordinary metaphysical concept that things will go better through our thinking better. We should have the other attitude, that we see in being, in the science of being, is embedded in it, integrated in it, the divine idea of the creative order of being, the word order, and that that idea is operating, not we are operating, not our thoughts have power, not our thoughts are operating, but that idea is operating and using those thoughts which are ready to be used for it. But it's the impact of the idea. And when one sees that, one has a much bigger trust that what we study is actually the order of being itself and not a human construction. Because we must have, be prepared to face that criticism that we just make up all these things. And they are not that way. The idea is ordered. It's an interesting thing that all agree that being is ordered. But the moment you talk about order, they say, you make it up. They don't want to investigate what that order is. They just say, there is order. Well, what's the use of saying there are laws and we don't know what the laws is? What's the use of saying there is a heavenly order and we don't know what that order is? It would mean that we are so separated from God that we can't know that order. But if we are principle and idea and that one, then we jolly well have a knowledge of that divine order.
Yeah.
So here you have another example of that order through the 1,000-year period. Now, I quickly take another example of it, namely the evolution of life, which shows you that in the evolution of life, from the first motion of any life up to the thinking man, that even in that evolution, the divine idea was at work. I like to take this from Dunois' book on human destiny, where he gives a history of the evolution of the divine idea as it precipitated itself on organic matter, showing that from the natural science standpoint, the point of view, there are 7 breaks in the evolution for which natural science can give no scientific explanation, meaning that there are 7 big breaks, 7 big periods being ushered into the evolution of life, which find no scientific explanation, and therefore, he could say, therefore, we have to attribute those happenings to what people commonly call God. We could call it the divine principle, we could call it the word order. Now, I'm not going to go deep into this wonderful story of those 7 stages, because I have written a little pamphlet, which I guess you know, or which you can read, a little pamphlet called A Recent Theory of Evolution and Its Implication, a pamphlet I wrote about 25 years ago when Dunois' book appeared. But it shows something very interesting, and I just quickly pinpoint those 7 stages, that he says, the first thing natural science cannot explain is the very beginning of life, the very fact that there is a creation of life. There was a period 3 billion years ago when there was no life on this planet, and suddenly there was life. And they can't explain with the laws of physics or chemistry or biology how that happened. So they must accept the interference of a higher law, the law of mind, as we would say. He says, a second period and point cannot be explained through natural science, a period which we would call the unfoldment and diversification of spirit, the order of spirit, namely, why evolution of life is evolving towards always more and more complex forms. Mrs. Eddy says, spirit diversifies, classifies, and individualizes all thoughts. Why is it that there is a constant diversification, classification, and individualization of life when the laws of physics just say the opposite, namely the law of entropy says that everything should go backward to the point of absolute death?